Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Wow!
Nice!
Yeah!
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Deutscher Fußballmeister.
FC Bayern Fußballmeister.
All right, there.
That got a bit Scorpions at the end.
Yeah. Well, then we're doing our job.
Which is good.
Yeah.
Which is good. Group trip to see the Hoff in Germany.
Is he playing?
He will be. He will be, won't he? It's like Ligabue in Italy. He'll be playing every 6 months, won't he?
Well,
who's the biggest recording artist in Italy?
Well, it's they all come from the same kind of region. So there's Vasco Rossi, Ligabue.
Who are Ligabue? Why is
no, so it's Luciano Ligabue.
He's amazing.
He's like the Springsteen of Italian rock music.
Nicky Bandini introduced me to him. Yeah. He's fantastic.
A barn burner of a Classico just last night ended as goose eggs, as our American cousins insist on saying. The first 0-0 in a Classico since the 23rd of November 2002. I pulled the team sheets from the 23rd of November 2002. Some great names in there.
They're not going to be pretty.
Well, Frank
Well, one of them's not going to be pretty.
Luis Figo's pretty.
Figo's in there. Juan Ramon Riquelme's in there.
Oh.
Yeah. As you guys have mentioned, yeah, Figo. Got a yellow card, Figo. Can't think why. Roberto Carlos. Guti's in there. Anyway, what do you guys make of that game last night? I saw that Gareth Bale had a goal disallowed through VAR. What are the major takeaways? What does this mean?
Well, I think it's interesting you brought up the one from November 2002 because that was a bad Barcelona team. Now this, on paper, is a much better Barcelona team, but they weren't very good last night. And that sort of dysfunction that they've had throughout the season, I kind of thought they would put that half to bed, really, with the Clásico, because they're very strong at home, because Real Madrid haven't won it in a long time now. And in fact, it was Real Madrid who dominated. It was a win without goals, they're saying in a lot of Madrid newspapers.
Portsmouth have a lot of them. My team.
But
are they really saying that?
Yeah. And
wow.
It was...
Says a lot.
I think partly on Real Madrid apparently never say anything about referees. Never. It's not their thing.
The bingo cards being filled already.
Yeah, they were not happy with VAR for two fouls that they thought should have been given on Rafael Varane in the penalty box. And Real Madrid had the best of the first half. They finished the game more strongly as well. In midfield, they were loads better than Barcelona. And Fede Valverde, who we've brought up a number of times, was excellent again. But what was interesting, I know we started the season when we were talking about Real Madrid, Luke, with you talking about this idea of a Zinedine Zidane part one tribute act that they're uncovering. Now, funnily enough, even though you had Valverde, Ferland Mendy in the team, it kind of felt a little bit like that all over again, but in a good way this time. You know,
right. So sometimes they will bring out the hits and everyone have a lovely time.
Yeah, exactly.
That's the point about tribute.
I think we're talking bootleg Beatles rather than Oasis.
And okay, yeah.
I think...
Although Oasis have had a hit.
Have they?
They had a hit, didn't they? What's it called? I'd Like to Teach the World to Sing. They did a cover of that. Yeah, they did a cover of that. And so they've had chart success that the bootleg Beatles have never enjoyed. The plot thickens, but please continue. Please continue.
And it was interesting, though, seeing Zinedine Zidane using the 4-4-2 that really worked for him in his last spell, and especially at the back end of in the second half of 2016-17, with, again, Isco at the tip of the diamond. And he's perfect for a game like this. You know, a number 10 that works that hard. Gareth Bale was not only good, did not only have a goal ruled out for a narrow offside.
It was Mondi who was adjudged to be offside, wasn't
yeah,
it?
Before yeah. he played the ball in.
That's right.
And it was the fact that Zinedine Zidane, who people tend to forget this now, as people have said, Zidane is the reason that Real Madrid want to get rid of Bale and sort of seem to distill it in their own minds to that. The fact that for a lot of his first spell, until their relationship broke down towards the end of it, but Zidane was the biggest defender of Bale. He always stood up for him throughout the injuries, throughout him being in and out of the team, throughout the suspicion that obviously has blown into something far more public and explicit that he prioritised Wales over Real Madrid.
And what about golf?
Yeah. Has he caddied for him? Was that too far?
Well, he did have time off, so we can't rule it out, can we? But I think it was interesting to hear him come up and after the game, Zidane, and not just say that, Bale's in the squad and we need to use him, but actually praise him and say that he was excellent.
Was Casemiro not the best player on the pitch?
Oh, I think he was, but...
Which I think in some respects...
Yeah, might kind of lend more weight to the theory. Yeah.
But I think it's interesting to hear Zidane come out and publicly give Bale a lot of praise.
What do you make of just a self-indulgent question from me, if you'll forgive me for a moment? What do you make of Luka Jovic now? We haven't talked about him for maybe a couple of months. Obviously, a big name, a big money signing, hasn't featured much at all. For Real Madrid and didn't get off the bench last night.
And he's had some dreadful luck as well.
Yeah.
I think we have to bear that in mind. He was, before that extraordinary equaliser they had at Valencia last weekend, where it was Courtois' header batted out by Domenech and then Courtois managed to smuggle it through to Benzema, who equalised pretty much the last kick of the game. Mm. Just before that, it looked as if Jovic had got a last minute equaliser, but he was offside. He was clearly offside, but it just felt like that's the way it's going for him. That it would have been a huge feather in his cap to get that late equaliser at Valencia. It was a smart enough finish, but he just did go a little bit early, and it's not really working for him. And it's difficult because when we did the Ramble Meets with Sebastian Haller actually this week, which is
out now.
Still available
out yesterday.
Yeah, it came out yesterday. Mm. We were talking about how that three at Frankfurt came together and how it came together under Adi Hütter, in my view, and how he changed the way that they played from a more circumspect style under Kovac. That they put all those three, Haller, Rebic and Jovic, in the team and it clicked. And the thing that Haller said is, he said, well, it's not just about the coach. It's about the fact that the three of us got to know each other. Hmm. We got to play together. And that improved our relationship, and the fact that we did have different skill sets, it all sort of melded together. And I think if you're looking at a reason why it won't work for Jovic at Real Madrid, maybe that's it.
Mm.
Maybe he's not going to get that time. Well, I think he isn't going to get that time, is he? Because you look at him and you think, that is a guy who would really benefit from Karim Benzema's service. Mm. But it's not about serving him because he's not about Cristiano Ronaldo. So is he ever going to get there?
What do you both think that it means? What conclusions can we draw from this game? reference the La Liga title race. Both teams locked on 36 points, 5 points clear of Sevilla. And I suppose it's kind of just a bit as you were, is it?
Well, I look at what Zidane has achieved. Remember, not so long ago, we were talking about him being on the brink. And again, this idea that Jose Mourinho might be being lined up to replace him. And instead, credit to Zidane, he's turned this around. They're 12 games unbeaten. They're level on points with Barcelona at the top. Mm. I think in some respects, you look at their Champions League form, the kind of performances that he's got out of some of the other young players that they've signed, be it Rodrigo, be it Vinicius, particularly in that competition rather than La Liga. And I think there's more, again, it's just a reminder that there's more to him than simply the fact that he is this facilitator, that he is some kind of Galactico whisperer, that there are nuances to his management when it comes to...
So I feel with you two.
finding the right position for players, finding the right game plan for a particular opponent. And, you know, I think some people thought he was a bit of a busted flush, that those three Champions League titles, while the last one was probably the most impressive of the three, he was riding on the back of a wave that Carlo Ancelotti had kind of started and was kind of maintaining the same style of management that Carlo had had at that time. And instead, in this second spell, it started with its difficulties. And I think with the time in the job to assess the players, he's beginning to turn it around and show a new look, a fresh face to this Real Madrid side, which, you know, I think given it's not as good a team as it was 2 to 3 years ago, when particularly the superstars who were still there were younger, fresher, still in their prime, and it's a different kind of job, I think, you know, we need to kind of tip our hats a little bit to Zidane.
We talk about Real Madrid being a team who judged themselves on their Champions League performance, their European Cup pedigree and tradition. Would they be more keen to win the league this season, do you think?
Yeah, and that's what Zidane said right at the end of last season. He said the priority for next season is La Liga.
I think all top managers say that these days, though.
How you can sell that to the club, I think, is a different question.
I think all top managers say that because they know, because the top five leagues, for the most part, feel one-sided in that Bayern are going to run away with the Bundesliga. I know it's wide open this year. Juventus are going to run away with Serie A. Man City and Liverpool are going to run away with the Premier League. There is a feeling, I think, that managers, when it comes to managing expectation, say, oh, you guys have got it all wrong. You know, 38-game league, that's where you really judged about how good you are.
But they're in a totally different boat, aren't they? One, because they're in a league with Barcelona, and two, because they've won the league twice in 11 years, which is absolutely feeble for a club of those
dimensions.
I get that.
Andy Brassel throwing big sticks around. Feeble.
Well, it is.
I get that.
Yeah, fair.
I get that, but Ernesto Valverde, for rightly or wrongly, and don't judge anything on social media, is considered a failure or not good enough for Barcelona because he only does it in the league. Mm. You know, ultimately, he is judged not on the league titles that he keeps delivering for Barcelona, but the fact that they keep going out in the quarterfinals.
James, you've traditionally been, as far as I remember, strong on this in terms of you think the league, winning the league, it shouldn't be considered just to be, oh yeah, it was not that off. And of course, Juventus are going to win the league. What you've always said is it's actually quite hard.
Yeah.
And it's less luck at play, if you like, than in a European competition or an international competition.
I think it's still hard to maintain standards and go again. And I think particularly for teams that are now on very long winning streaks, and you know, Juventus are one of them, it should not be overlooked that they have been challenged and seriously challenged in, I'd say, three or four of those. Mm. But at the same time, it becomes easier for them to maintain those standards because of the wealth that they're amassing. Mm. And again, this is, you know, one of the things that's been remarked upon about the last 16 of the Champions League and how every single team in it is from the top five leagues. Mm. In some respects, that only helps enable that further. But I do stand by that point. I still think we should, when a team wins a league title, we should recognise it as a hell of an achievement. Mm.
Schalke hat es! Der FC Schalke ist Sieger im UEFA-Pokal 1996.
Okay, I've not been able to move for more than a handful of Tottenham Hotspur fans listing themselves as delighted that they've drawn Leipzig in the Champions League knockout phase this season. Talk of it being the best draw they could have got. They're very happy about it, take it all day long, etc. Now, I don't have a lack of sympathy for that viewpoint, but Andy Brassel, should they be a little bit more wary than that?
Yes, they should be. And I think the biggest question around that, before we get to this week's Leipzig game...
Yes, we'll definitely talk about that.
Yeah, is... I think the coaching element of it is absolutely fascinating because Leipzig having improved this season is a direct result of Julian Nagelsmann being in charge. He's still putting his print on the team and on the club because it's a very stable environment. They've got a very established way of doing things, and they've hoped that he will add a little something to that, and I think he has already, and I think he'll add more. I wrote actually earlier this week, this is a huge test for Jose Mourinho, I think, on a personal level, because if you look at the last couple of big knockout games he's faced, the last few big knockout games of consequence that he's faced in the Champions League. We know he's got an incredible history in the Champions League, and we know he'll always be a part of Champions League history. But that's kind of what it's felt like the last couple of times. I think you look at how they went out to Sevilla with United, how he went out to a 10-man Paris Saint-Germain with Chelsea.
What about Leipzig's football heritage? Is that what you're about to bring up?
I mean, I think it's something notable. Mm. And you look at the coaches that outcoached him in those games. Vincenzo Montella, who barely lasted...
Careful, Andy. Yeah. Careful.
The aeroplane. You took that man's name in this studio in front of me and James Horncastle.
I'm keeping
he
going.
He knows how to wear a turtleneck.
I'm keeping... Yeah. He doesn't know how to win El Gran Derby, though, does he? Wow. I mean, basically, he got out-coached by Montella, who was in the middle of a disastrous spell with Sevilla.
Copa del Rey final.
Carry on, Andy.
And then we won't even talk about what happened in the final. And before that, Laurent Blanc, who's nobody's idea of a tactical genius.
No, agree. And
so basically, we talked about this in terms of the staff that Mourinho's got around himself at Spurs. The fact that he's not got the old band back together, that he's got in Joao Sacramento, who's a young tactician, to work with him. The idea that he does need to rethink and have new ideas. And this is apparent here. Of course, Nagelsmann is still learning his way in the Champions League, but he got to do a lot of that in last year with Hoffenheim, and they played very well whilst making the sort of mistakes that make sure you don't get through. But I think seeing him work stuff out in the group stage was quite interesting. They had some bad situations to get out of. They had to sort their home form in order to take control of the group, and they've sorted their home form in Europe and in the league. And then they were 2-0 down to Benfica in the 90th minute, and they managed to keep going and get a draw out of that so they could qualify in the first place. There's really interesting versatility to this side, and that's what he's given Leipzig. It's interesting, when you spoke to Timo Werner in the second season that Leipzig were up, of course, they had a brilliant first season in the top flight in 16-17. Now in the fourth season in the top flight, you know, they played one way. They pressed and they counter-attacked. And now, in the second season, Timo Werner was saying, well, we're having difficulty because other teams are giving us the ball.
Mm.
And we don't really know how to deal with that. Mm. And you could argue that they
Dortmund kept giving them the ball in midweek.
Yeah. They never really worked that out. Well, it ended up suiting Leipzig quite well because they had less possession, but which is exactly what they wanted. But we'll come to that in a minute.
Can I?
I think what's before you do, I think what's interesting about Nagelsmann and what he's managed to add to them is he converted Hoffenheim into a team that were able to master loads of different ways of playing. And he's already started to do that with Leipzig without changing too much. Yes, they still press, and they did that in the early stages of the Dortmund game. They can sit off and they can recover. They can take possession of the ball and boss the game. And that's something that they've managed to do in a few short months under Nagelsmann. I think the interesting question is where they're going to be in February, because we always talk about when this draw comes out, you know, what could happen in terms of injury, in terms of form. I think you look at Leipzig and they've got quite a margin of progression, and because Germany has quite a substantial winter break, he's got time to actually take a breather, assess and get back on the training field with them, which, you know, a lot of coaches don't have the chance to do, and English teams won't have the chance to do.
Andy, you've overlooked the greatest piece of coaching that Julian Nagelsmann has done up until now. Mm. It's regenerate the original goal bay from OTC. Yeah. Patrick Schick.
He was the original goal.
Involved in four goals in his last four games. I can't tell you how delighted I am to see Schick again on fire.
I tell you what, no one is overlooking that, James. And a few people were complaining, actually, when the team sheets came out of Westfalen, that Schick had been left out the team. And
we're not doing this now, because I want to ask, we're going to do it in a minute. In a minute. Because the reason I picked out Spurs v Leipzig in this draw is not just because I wanted to have a thinly veiled dig at some Spurs fans that I know. I'm not above that. But because it truly is the most fascinating of the draw.
And it's really balanced.
And I'll tell you why I feel it is. Jose Mourinho has gone through a diminuendo in his career, to the point of where a year or so ago he's being linked with going to China. I mean, it's, you know, well, yeah, a bit of disrespect to China there. Jose Mourinho is one of the most decorated.
The ramble off the internet there.
Exactly. I think we might have fallen foul of that a few times in the past. But we've gone from one of the most venerable managers in Europe, and you've already talked a bit about his history, to, as you also said, the history man, right? He's coming up against an upwardly mobile, exciting, precise European coach of the generation below him now. And it'll be the Ali versus Foreman aspect of this tie is a fascinating one, because he's made moves towards reinventing himself. You guys said to me when he took the Spurs job, look at the people he's hired around him. Look at what he's looking to do. Look at how willing he is, seems to be, to change. And we've seen in his early moments in his Spurs tenure that they're not doing necessarily what I particularly thought they would do. They're not kind of just shoring up the defence, keeping clean sheets and playing boring football.
One clean sheet.
Yeah, they can't keep any clean sheets. Yeah. So something definitely has changed. Mm. The question is, can he do it against a Leipzig with a very precise coach in Julian Nagelsmann?
I think Leipzig. That'd be good. I think, look, it's only 4 years ago that they were in Bundesliga 2. Which, you know, regardless of the resource that they have, is extraordinary. But I'm pointing that out because of the experience. I think experience in these games matters. And, you know, Spurs have got better and better in the Champions League over the last two or three years, obviously getting to the final last year. I think Andy makes a very good point about that opportunity the Bundesliga affords managers to spend the winter regenerating and reassessing what you've done over the last 3 or 4 months. It's something that won't be afforded to Jose Mourinho, who will have a very congested fixture period through December, through Christmas and into the new year. And that, while it hasn't stood in the way of Premier League teams in Europe over the last few years, as we've seen last year, four and getting to, you know, the two European finals, I think it is something to maybe consider when you look at the style with which this Leipzig side play. And at the moment, you know, a lot might change in a couple of months, and that's true of all these ties. I expect Spurs to get better at defending than they are now.
I'd agree with that.
They can't get much worse, can they?
Well, so Yeah, this is a really fascinating tie. I think there are lots. I don't think there's a bad tie in this round of 16, which again is more reason for the European Super League.
on that, well, we're not going to go down that road. On that though, which of the other Champions League ties, and do you know what? Grab one each between the Champions League and the Europa League of ties outside of the Spurs Leipzig tie that stand out for you.
I think maybe Dortmund versus Paris Saint-Germain is pretty interesting. I have Paris Saint-Germain as favourites for that. But, you know, there's a lot of pressure on them, isn't there? Because even against a team like Dortmund, who do have excellent Champions League experience, who have a coach whose mentality and philosophy is really built for Champions League knockout football, against their former coach, and there's still that feeling, isn't there, between Thomas Tuchel and Borussia Dortmund to an extent. And especially after the way they went out last season, especially after the way that the aftermath of that is still felt, the aftermath of going out to Manchester United is still felt, because Thomas Tuchel is not as close to his players as he was. And a lot of people feel that is because he kind of hung the players out to dry a bit after the Manchester United game. Now, on seeing that second leg, I think, fair enough. I mean, they turned up expecting to win. I don't think it was a case of Paris Saint-Germain getting nervous in the latter stages of the Champions League as they have so many other times. Like
that was a bit of a lightning strike of a game, wasn't it? It's kind of a bit of a, well, that doesn't happen very often type
yeah.
thing.
But there seems to be quite a lot of ill feeling around the fact that
on the other hand, that
Tuchel
happens to PSG
said,
every season.
Yeah,
so,
yeah. But it's not the result; it's the manner, isn't it?
Yes,
and that's always the case in the Champions League. And yeah, I think the way that Tuchel sort of came out and said, "Well, you know, as you say, this has happened to PSG before. You can't really pin it on me, can you?"
Mm.
And the players were like, "All right, then.
Yeah.
Maybe we're not mates."
Yeah,
and I think that has made a lasting difference. Having said that, though, largely, give or take, the game at Real Madrid, very, very impressive in the group stages. Now, group stages, knockouts, chalk and cheese.
Yes.
But I would make them marginal favourites. They do have an enormous amount to prove against a Dortmund team who've got a lot of attacking weapons.
Yeah, Dortmund showed a decent... I was at the game against Spurs. They ended up losing 3-0, I think it was, and Spurs blew them away in one particular half of the game, I think the second half.
Yes.
And they were very naive. They were great to watch, Dortmund, exciting, played nice football.
I'd have tightened up now.
Yeah, well, yeah, right. they were very naive, so I mean, they're not going to get away with that kind of naivety against PSG either. James, presumably you want to talk about AZ versus LASK in the Europa League.
Talk about any of those Europa League ties.
Because the Europa League is unique as a competition that doesn't actually get going to the semi-final.
I mean,
is there any other tournament you could think of that doesn't get going to the semi-final?
I love the randomness of that competition. I know it's one that...
We've got a third one coming as well.
And this is the thing.
Let's make some more of them. People like them. Let's have some more of them.
I mean, they're really focus grouped. The name, didn't they? Let's call it the UEFA Conference.
Yeah.
Do you know what the conference is or historically is in the UK? I mean, come on.
It's a name that people miss in football circles since it's become the National League. That's what it is.
I mean, look, the tie that I look at, and we've touched upon this earlier in the show, is Real Madrid Man City.
Because Man City wanted to test themselves against Real Madrid in the group stage, didn't they say? Well, they're going to test themselves now.
I mean, for all the obvious reasons there, I mean, be it Pep coming up against Madrid again.
Mm.
Zidane and how this team seems to be entering a second phase under him. And, you know, as Andy was just saying, I felt that the game at the Bernabeu between Real Madrid and PSG was probably the game that was played at the highest standard throughout the group stages in terms of technique at speed. I don't think there was anything that came close to it. Over what the first 4 months of the Champions League, and that kind of persuaded me that Madrid, while they don't have the same aura as they did a couple of years ago, they're still a team to be taken very, very seriously.
Will it be a good litmus test for the chat that Guardiola's star is starting to fade at Man City?
Well. Look, seeing where they are in the Premier League, it's clear that the Champions League is now even more important to them, more important than, you know, when we've always seemed to have kind of thrust upon Pep and City that the reason he was appointed was to deliver Champions League success. And given the growing sense that this could be his last season at the Etihad, then yes, I think these games do take on an ulterior importance. I think it's going to be really interesting to see how they manage that kind of pressure, and whether they can live up to what we've seen in the Premier League and actually translate that into the Champions League.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, to get 30, to get 20, 20, 20, to get 20, 20, to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
All right, finally, the boys are off the leash. You can talk about Dortmund v Leipzig now. I'll just take a little break.
Shocking,
go make a cup of tea. I called it a barn burner in my notes. A barn burner is a boxing term.
You also called El Clasico a barn burner in your intro.
Did I?
Yeah.
Oh, but I was being sarcastic then, wasn't I?
I mean, I hadn't heard that term before, so I'm all for hearing it multiple times in this episode.
The worrying thing is, I make so many podcast episodes, I didn't even remember saying that.
It makes me think of the Wicker Man, actually.
Yeah. I think it's a boxing term. It comes from when, you know, it's a point in a boxing match where the fight just catches fire and everyone just goes for it. People just go for it and everyone goes, a barn burner. I think that's where it comes from. This game was, sarcasm aside, an absolute barn burner. In the middle of Germany's English week, which I love. They call it an English week.
Yeah.
It finished 3-3. Jadon Sancho scored for his seventh game in a row, but he did go off injured, I believe. I don't think it's anything serious, but he did hobble
off. Just a little minor one.
Is this set to be, I mean, is it just the fact that this was a great game, or is it set to be a defining moment in the Bundesliga season?
It could be. And I think it's certainly defining in terms of Bayern having genuine challenges. And I think, funnily enough, in the night, it was the whole thing was a bit of a paradox.
You were at the game, weren't you, Andy?
Yeah.
Talk us through what the atmosphere was like, for example.
It was pretty special. It always is at Westfalen, but on the other hand, there's just this little simmering thing between Dortmund and Leipzig, because Dortmund see themselves as the guardians of the purity of the football experience. And therefore, they despise Leipzig.
Yeah,
really.
So there's a bit of extra spice.
Yeah, and there always has been. I mean, I went to the first time they played at Westfalen, which was in February 2017. And that was the one where there were hundreds and hundreds of banners telling Leipzig and telling Red Bull where to go. Mm. And there was a bit more nasty stuff outside the ground. Now, the fact is that the DFB couldn't do anything about the stuff outside the ground, because that doesn't fall under the club's responsibility. So what they did is they fined them 100 grand for the Palace.
Right.
And closed the Sud Tribuna, where the Gelber Wand is, for a game, a subsequent game against Wolfsburg. And, yeah, there's the dislike hasn't really gone away, but just the, I guess the over-expression of it has been toned down a little bit. But there is still that edge. Leipzig were booed onto the pitch and booed off it and booed back on when they came on in the second half.
It's weird because there wasn't a single booking in the game. So did it not translate to the pitch itself?
No. Well, I think in terms of the football, there's no time to foul anyone. You know, they play with such intensity and pace, both of them. And I think the paradox of it really was the fact that on one hand, both teams showed the quality they have and why they should be title contenders right to the end. And they both showed a lot of reasons why Bayern are going to win the league all over again.
Right, okay.
Because I think as Dortmund, you walk away from that game, and I said it in my Guardian piece today, how you recover really from playing a game of that quality, especially in the first half, in which Dortmund were absolutely sensational against the team that arrived as league leaders, and you come away from that game having not won it. Then again, Julian Nagelsmann was talking at the end about, yeah, it's a point gained, it feels like a victory, but he's realistic enough to know, and he was realistic enough to say explicitly that you can't play like that in a match that big. Leipzig walked away from that, and Nagelsmann walked away from that, knowing that they should have really lost 3 or 4 nil. And what changed the game was the bit at the end of the beginning of the second half, where your pal Roman Bürki had his moment. And the incredible thing is, right at the end of the first half, having had absolutely nothing to do all game, he had to make two saves in quick succession, which he did brilliantly from Paulsen and Timo Werner. And then he came out for the second half, and what, 65 seconds into it, straight ball, he comes out to head it clear, heads it straight to Timo Werner, who rolls it in. And then after 5 minutes after that, Julian Brandt, who scored one of the goals of the season in the first half after being set up by Sancho, doing an incredible spin by around Deo Upamecano.
He had a great game, by the way.
Yeah, and who's one of the best defenders in the league.
He looks brilliant. I know it's a weird thing to say against a team who's scored three goals against them. He looks fantastic.
No, he's outstanding. And like a lot of playmakers, like a lot of defenders like that, he's almost a primary playmaker as well.
There's he did so well much under Chris Wilder.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Well, interestingly enough, of course, Arsenal were really interested in Upamecano last summer, but they thought 80 million's too steep. We'll spend it on a forward we don't need instead.
And probably Upamecano got on the flight, flew over North London, saw the Emirates almost on fire. So I'm not going anywhere near that.
That was probably it. And it was extraordinary because Brandt, having scored that magnificent goal, then gifted Werner a second. Now, after that, they still managed to come back and take the lead. But again, I said in my piece, beating Leipzig once is hard enough. I mean, they essentially set themselves the task of doing it three times, which proved a little bit too much.
It looked like an aspect of the second half that you're referencing, the game was completely out of control. It was crazy.
Dortmund set up 5 of the 6 goals.
Yeah.
And I don't have a pop at Roman Bürki anymore, because I don't know if you remember, I had an ill-advised side swipe at Gigi Buffon. And Horncastle went on a massive rant, sat in that chair there. He said, there's an element to this show that certain people only watch certain players in Champions League weeks, and that's a problem. And that is a problem. You said that to me.
Did you see what Gigi did yesterday?
Go on.
647th appearance in Serie A.
Broke a record.
Matched Paolo Maldini's record, all-time appearance leader in Italian football.
What's the leader, Gigi?
Yeah, good on you.
Keep doing it.
We contractually can't mention goalkeepers without going on to Buffon.
No, we can't. We can go on to Italy now, actually, but before we do, is there any word from Sancho? He's having a great period of form off the back of getting quite a lot of criticism. Now he's hobbled off with an injury. What do we expect to be the next few weeks like? What's it going to be like for Jadon?
Well, of course, he's going to have a bit of a rest, which I think is useful. And you look at his form, is absolutely extraordinary. I think what's the most interesting thing about it is how much he's talked about how much he enjoys playing with the players around him. So, you know, all this stuff over timekeeping was made up into very quickly, he's definitely going to leave in January. He's definitely going to leave in January. I've always said that it's more likely that he will leave at the end of the season, and he will leave at the end of the season. Because, firstly, I think from a practicality level, piecing together a deal that big in January is very, very difficult. But secondly, what we've seen in recent weeks, he absolutely loves playing at Dortmund.
Yeah.
And he loves playing not just with Marco Reus, but Torgan Hazard now. He loves it. And when
that was the front three against Leipzig, wasn't
yeah,
it?
And yeah. When he talks after games, he's very, very keen to get across how much he's enjoying himself. And, you know, he knows he's going to be going somewhere else in the future, but there's no point wishing your life away that quickly. I mean, he's still only 19. And I think sometimes when judgments have been made of him and his apparent conduct, people forget that. Because he's such a titan on the pitch, people forget he's 19 and he's entitled to do some stupid stuff.
Er ist einfach überragend, ist super sympathisch, ein ganz, ganz toller Mensch und Fußballer. Und ich freue mich, dass er heute bei mir in der Sendung ist. Jaden, herzlich willkommen.
Hallo, Nobby. Wie geht's?
I feel good. Da, 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 da.
James, you've been speaking to Max Allegri.
Yeah, that's why I was away.
Yeah, last week.
A couple of weeks ago.
Last week, wasn't it? Oh, week before last, maybe.
Can't remember. It's all a blur in this Christmas period.
You're interviewing Max Allegri, a man who is very much in demand, but currently out of work as a coach.
Well, he's still being paid by Juventus. And I think this is actually something that's quite important to, again, highlight when we discuss managers who've been sacked or moved on from.
Yeah.
For example, like Carlo Ancelotti at the moment. Mm. Yeah, Carlo Ancelotti, probably by the time this goes out, will be the Everton manager. Mm. But it comes down to, again, negotiating with the club that has just sacked you to release the contract that you're still on.
Yeah.
And Max is still being paid by Juventus. They felt it was kind of a nice gesture, actually, to just honour the work that he did to pay out the remainder of his contract.
Whereas if it was any other Serie A club, you'd be thinking they'll fire their manager in 3 weeks and bring him back. Well,
yeah. No, true.
Yeah. So give us a flavour of, I mean, you had a long-form one-on-one interview with Max Allegri. Give us a flavour of kind of type of character he is, what it was like, what you were talking about and all the rest of it.
He's a great guy to be around. Yeah. I mean, he came in and just wanted to chat. He didn't want to be interviewed. He wanted to just talk about football. And he put no kind of restrictions on what we could ask him. And this is kind of who Max is, because he loves nothing more than life outside of football. Mm. Because I think he feels that you learn a lot from that, which you can then apply to football, mm-hmm. which is ultimately a game about managing 23 human beings. And you tend to, you know, if you're at the bar with your mates or you're, you know, over dinner, sharing ideas, talking about what's going on in their lives, you can then kind of, you're really better placed.
What's going on in your life?
All kinds of stuff, mate. It's
yeah.
a mess.
Yeah.
he just wanted to talk about football. He was, he's got some quite divisive views, I would say.
Well, hang on, careful.
Well, no.
In this day and age.
In Italy...
Isn't he strangely against tactics?
Tactics are king in Italy.
Yeah.
And he rails against theorists, scientists. There's an element of Jose Mourinho talking about football Einsteins in Max's kind of outlook on the game, which is we are overcomplicating it. He particularly, for example, took issue with the league, Serie A. I've got a lot of issues. who are introducing tablets. You know, you can take an iPad into the dugout. We've got this app we've got this app that you can download. And Allegri just thinks that is just football going completely the wrong direction. That football is about touch, feel, sensibility. Mm-hmm. That there's a lot that, for all the will in the world and, you know, all the effort made and how good a lot of these algorithms are and et cetera, and the data that is now delivered onto your desk as a top flight manager by your performance analysis team, nothing beats the eye. Nothing beats your ability to get inside the head of a player. And again, one of the things he said, not just to me, but Rory Smith from the New York Times, who was there, was that, you know, one of the biggest loads of BS he hears is, you know, managers should watch the game from the stands. You know, in some respects, when they are suspended, some people claim that it is better for them to have that viewpoint rather than from the dugout. And he was like, that is codswallop.
Because a thinly veiled dig at Michael Cox there from Joe Horncastle.
No, but
at Christmas of all times of year.
But
unreal.
He is saying that, he wants to be in a position where he can look a player in the face and tell whether he is... what he's going through at that moment in particular game. Mm-hmm. Even just to hear the sound of the sounds of the pitch and get a real and judge the mood of a game. And that is as important as any of the kind of tactical thinking, strategy. We break down games now in terms of like, oh, this strategy, this is what won the game. And we lose sight of the human element and sometimes the randomness of football, which cannot be completely controlled.
It's an interesting, really interesting seem to mine that, because people are very polarized on it. You get people who are really into analysis, tactics, shape, all that kind of thing, who will be openly quite derisive of this, in quotes, proper football men.
Well, so you can't have a combination of the two things.
And it happens.
Is that what you're saying?
And vice versa as well. It's probably a poor example, but your Tim Sherwoods of the world probably are very mistrusting of these new developments. When clearly the answer is probably a bit of both does you well. The eye test is really important for a coach when he wants to see if he wants to work with a player, for example. But of course, data is obviously of great use as well.
Also, as a journalist, what I think it reflects is that we tend to analyse games in this manner because that is the information that is made available to us. We don't know what goes on in training. You know, regardless of how good our sources are, we don't know what a player is necessarily going through. You saw, I think, in the Daily Mail, there was the interview with Jesse Lingard.
Correct, yeah.
The other day, and it went into some of the issues that he's had off the pitch in looking after his family. We don't know all of these things. And so what we do know is we get, Opta will give us data. You can go to all these other analytics sites and take out subscriptions, be it with StatsBomb or be it with Y-Scout, and find out all this kind of stuff, which helps, gives us the information that actually, informs us on some of the thinking behind a coach's choices, how they went into a game, how they planned for it. And that information is more readily available than a lot of the kind of human side, which I suppose managers interface with on a daily basis. And that's what informs their choices as much as what their performance analysts are giving them. Performance analysts from a statistical point of view rather than from a physical fitness point of view. One of the things I actually start the piece with this is Allegri is very passionate about horse racing and believes he's learned a lot by going to the race course over the years. His grandfather used to
take... I know a few other managers have used that.
and he was like, he was saying that you should always, one of the greatest horse trainers in Italian history was a guy called Federico Tesio, who basically said, I judge things by, I get up in the morning, I go down to the stables, I walk the horses through the paddock and I see how the legs are moving. And that's how I judge whether the horse is in a good place or not, whether it's in good nick or not. And that's what I do in training. I look at the player's legs and how they move. And then when I go back into my office in the training facility, I see if what I've seen is reflected in the physical and performance data there. And I tell myself, I tell all my assistants, watch the players first, then go and look at the computer.
Right. Will he be looking at a group of young men's legs anytime soon, James? Or is he
I think the issue for Allegri is, we as journalists we have a responsibility to this, and also I think anyone on social media does as well. When it's easier to make a case for someone when they have a brand around them, which you look at, for example, Sadi with Sadismo, goes into the dictionary. People in social media talk about Sadi Ball. He'd never called his football Sadi Ball, and it creates an idea. It really kind of captures the imagination.
The Gegenpress as well,
Gegenpressing, all these concepts that are I suppose, indicative of some kind of innovation, that the game is moving forward and they are part of the game moving forward. Whereas Allegri is like, it's a simple game. Win your tackles, win your headers, and judge your players for what they are. Change with that. You know, I can only do, you know, I can only come up with a certain style and game plan depending on the characteristics of the players that are available to me. And that's one of the things that I think is a great string in Allegri's bow, is that he is someone who is able to rebuild teams. You know, you look at Juventus over the last 5 years, they've always tended to sell two or three of their key players every summer, and he's had to basically start again from scratch. There's no style that he can impose on a team or a club that does that, because ultimately you have to rip it up and start again every summer. But how do you sell that? How do you go to an audience, say on, yeah, to be it to journalists, be it to social media, and basically say this is the realistic point of view, this is the real politic of management.
It's never really held Ancelotti back, though.
No, it hasn't, and that's the thing. You can point to
probably
what you've won.
But he's won champion. I mean, Allegri's lost two Champions League finals, I guess.
But he's got to two Champions League finals. Yeah. Even though, and people look at Juventus and what they've done in the league, even though they are overmatched financially compared with what? They're outside the top 10 in the rich list in European football, going by Deloitte, in terms of revenue. And that's even when they've signed the likes of Cristiano Ronaldo. So to get to those two Champions League finals, particularly the first one, when no one expected them to get that far, because they'd gone out in the group stage the previous season under Antonio Conte. I mean, I've mentioned Conte just in passing there. It's amazing how different these two characters are. Because Conte really feels that it's insulting and humiliating to the profession when coaches like Allegri, for example, they stand by this mantra, which the best managers are the ones that do the least damage. They put players in the right conditions to thrive, and then they let them get on with it. Conte is all about almost overwhelming you with information and instruction, so that if you find yourself in a position where you don't, all of a sudden a defender has worked you out, you have something, you have a solution to basically cause that defender another problem. And Allegri is all about, I think this is actually valid not just in football but in life in general, is that, yeah, if we want an answer to something these days, we just go to Google. There's an app for everything, you know, and we rely on our brains less and less.
Yeah.
And he wants to do less teaching and more learning. He wants to stimulate players to learn how to get out of situations, overcome certain obstacles, which I think is actually a really interesting way of looking at that. Not just that job, but any job.
We've evolved not to need to retain information anymore because we can just go and find it.
Yeah.
So, and the other big story in Italy, of course, is Serie A apologising after imagery of chimpanzees were used in artwork, you know, supposedly to be an anti-racism message, an anti-racism campaign. Now, I think people, majority of our listeners are in the UK, they would have seen that and seen it on its face and be like, that's just absolutely ridiculous. How can you even get on board what they were thinking there? My first question to you, James, is there an aspect of like Italian culture or Italian thinking that we can't make the connection to because we're British, or is this just a really bad, tone-deaf, ill-judged kind of move?
I think it's the latter.
Okay.
And I think, as AC Milan said in the statement they put out reacting to this, it's not only the wrong idea when it comes to putting together an initiative for anti-racism, it's the lack of consultation to the stakeholders in the league. That is a real problem.
Because they just unilaterally did this and didn't speak to any of the clubs or anything like that?
Well, apparently not, even though the artist, Simone Fugazzotto, has said that he's a stubborn guy, and he went ahead and did this anyway. We should say that Fugazzotto, he pretty much only paints chimpanzees.
Right, okay.
And so the league knew what it was getting into must have known, well, they clearly didn't, but they should have known how problematic collaborating with an artist whose muse, if you like, are chimpanzees for an anti-racism initiative. And I think that is the problem, and the league has subsequently come out.
I mean, it sounds like a piss take.
They have apologised for any offence caused, and they've kind of thrown the artist under the bus.
Right.
When the artist did not come to them and basically say, guys, I do this, I think it's a really good idea for an anti-racism initiative. Mm. They approached him. And I think that gives you so little confidence in the league's ability to take this issue seriously, because it is killing Serie A. It's absolutely, I think it's turning people off the league in a way that no other issue is. And they need to get a serious grip of it. I'm aware that there are a handful of clubs, but particularly two, AS Roma and AC Milan, yeah, who feel that they need to take this into their own hands.
Yeah, okay.
Because there is so little faith in the league's ability to get a grip of this issue. And they feel that they need, and they have taken action. You see it with Corriere dello Sport, how they banned them until the end of the year after the Black Friday headline. You saw how Roma reacted to the racist abuse that Juan Jesus got on social media by banning that individual for life from coming to Roma games. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they are serious about putting together a protocol, if you like, in terms of prevention and reaction to racist incidents. That's the league's job, and the league clearly isn't doing it.
Luigi Di Cervo's comments were really strange, basically, particularly in light of what you just said there. I didn't realise that Fugazzotto only painted chimpanzees, because Di Cervo said, I realised it was inappropriate. And then he said, we're working on an official anti-racism campaign which cannot be identified with Simone Fugazzotto's work, and it will be presented by the end of February. And it's kind of like, well, you knew what artist you were hiring, presumably. Mm. So, I mean, it just sounds to me like he's just trying to absolve himself of responsibility.
What faith does anyone have in there being anything worthwhile at the end of February if there's this level of understanding now? I mean, going back to what James was saying about people being turned off Serie A a bit, I think that has huge implications. I mean, clearly the main issue is that this sort of approach is morally repugnant, but I think when you look at, well, we know where the Premier League is, but you look where the Bundesliga are placing themselves, where La Liga are placing themselves in terms of international expansion.
Yeah.
I mean, that leaves Serie A quite vulnerable.
It looks very it ends up looking very parochial, and that's obviously a big concern. But what's of chief concern, of course, is the fact that, you know, men and women and anyone should be able to go to work without being racially abused. All right. Let's do games of the week, guys. Last week, Andy, you had Dortmund 3, Leipzig 3. We talked all about that. I had Napoli-Parma, which ended up Napoli 1, Parma 2. It feels like a lifetime ago now. A late Jovino winner gave Parma their first win in Naples since 2013.
Yeah, just to quickly look at that, I think this strike partnership, if you can call it a partnership, between Jovino and Dejan Kulusevski. Kulusevski is the revelation of Serie A this season. 19-year-old Sweden international, Macedonian origin, who's on loan from Atalanta. He looks the business already. And I think you see the second goal, the winning goal. Mm. He scores the first one.
Is Koulibaly at fault for the first or the second?
I think
both.
Manolas and Koulibaly are at fault for the first goal. But Kulusevski outpaces Koulibaly, who's quick, outmuscles him, and then has the composure to finish. And then in stoppage time, he has the presence of mind to just pause for a moment, wait for Jovino to get into the right position, and he plays the right pass. And for a teenager to do that, amazing, on that stage at the Stadio San Paolo is really impressive, and it kind of explains why he is the most sought-after talent in Italian football at the moment.
20 goal bay?
His 2020 goal bet.
Yeah, nice. You had the Genoa derby, the derby
lantern derby, the lighthouse derby.
Genoa 0, Sampdoria 1, a late Manolo Gagliardini goal secured it for Samp, completing Ranieri's wins in derbies in Turin, Rome and Milan. And obviously this one.
You're not counting London.
Yeah, Ranieri's quote this week was brilliant, from based on the Cristiano Ronaldo goal last night. Did you see what he said? I'll read it to, well, people who are listening might not have heard it. He said, Cristiano did something you see in the NBA. He was in the air for an hour and a half, which is amazing. Yeah. And if you haven't seen that Ronaldo header, you should definitely seek it out. Yeah. Andy?
Yeah, the headline on the front of one of the Portuguese papers is Air Ronaldo.
Oh, brilliant.
Yeah.
What's your game of the week this week, mate?
It's going to be Betis versus Atletico Madrid, because Betis have come back into form.
It's a purist choice,
recent weeks.
There's no goals in the Atletico Madrid games. They've scored 18 and conceded 10 all season.
Yeah, well, you know, maybe Betis can change that. with Fekir and Joaquin looking good. They're already planning for January. And talking of planning for January, of course, what Atletico need, as you've said, Luke, is another striker. Now, that's sort of gathering pace this week with the news in France that Lyon, with the injuries to Memphis and Rennes Adelaide, that are going to finish their season. They're looking at Kevin Gamero, and they're looking at Thomas Lemar on loan. And obviously Atletico would love to get rid of Lemar.
Would that not be embarrassing for them as well, though, given the fanfare they signed him under and how much he cost them? Or they just want to cut their losses?
Is it more embarrassing than keeping around someone who costs 72 million and is getting booed on and off the pitch
by
supporters? Well, Simeone's committed to working with him while he's there and would like to get more out of him. That's the kind of guy he is. But the fact is, if they want to bring in another striker in January, even on a loan or a free, they haven't got the wages to do it at the moment. They're very, very close to their salary cap. The salary cap in Spain is defined by how much you turn over and how much you bring in. So if they get Lamar's wages off the books, then they've got room to bring in a striker, and that's what they're going to aim to do. But in the meantime, they'll just have to make do with Morata and Joao Felix, who's looking better and better and better.
Good. All right, good stuff. James?
I'm going to go with Atalanta against Milan because Atalanta lost at the weekend to Bologna. I don't think they deserve to lose. They were without Zapata. They've been without Zapata for what feels like an eternity now. Ilicic and Papu Gomez. They'll have, I think, Papu back for this one. Maybe Ilicic. And Milan, again, they deserve to beat Sassuolo in the game that was held on their 120th anniversary. I don't know if you saw this. They were a special kit. They renamed a roundabout outside of Casa Milan. It's the Herbert Kilpin roundabout now.
Nice.
Herbert Kilpin obviously founded the club. But yes, Milan need to get something out of this game. I think the performances have been improving. Certainly confidence within the club is that second half of the season won't be as bad as it's been in the first half. But obviously they want to get back into a race to get into European football. And it's games like this that they need points from in order to do that.
Great choice. Atalanta these days are just kind of a byword for an entertaining afternoon, aren't they? It's a great choice. I quite like the look of, it's the final game of the Serie A this weekend on Sunday night, Napoli's trip to Sassuolo.
Yes.
Chiefly because Napoli just can't buy a win at the moment. And you think any manager who, I mean, I don't think they've won the league since the middle of October, and any manager you think who would come in there and give them a real sort of new manager bounce, if you like, I don't know if that's a thing in Italy, but he's kind of a motivational type guy, Gattuso. You'd think it would be Gennaro Gattuso, but it hasn't worked so far. And Sassuolo, traditionally, in this current spell they've had in Serie A, that it's been quite a difficult place to go and get a result, isn't it?
Yes, Sassuolo
are quite good form themselves.
They got a point against Juventus in Turin a couple of weeks ago, which allowed Inter to go temporarily kind of top of the table. And they beat Brescia in the game that they had in hand last night.
And that was away as well, wasn't it?
Yep. Yeah. And they've got a player who was ex-Chelsea, Jeremy Bogart, who is by far and away the best dribbler in Serie A. Bogart's done really well.
Where is he on the Adama Traore scale?
Well, he's definitely a different build.
Most people are.
He's a little bit more lithe than Traore, but he's been really exciting to watch, as has Berardi, who was once upon a time the big talent in Serie A. And for whatever reason, the last 2 years, injuries and changes of manager, it hasn't worked, but he looks the business this season under De Zerbi.
Great, it's 10:30. The pub's probably now open, so let's go.
Okay.
Join me and Jonathan Wilson every Saturday on Football Ramble Daily for new episodes of Greatest Games in association with the Blizzard magazine. The Best of the Blizzard is available now. A perfect Christmas gift, I think so. 23 of our favourite pieces from the first 5 years of the Blizzard for you, friends and loved ones. Everything from Socrates and Scotland to St. Pauli and football smoking culture. Head to the shop now to buy the Best of the Blizzard at theblizzard.co.uk.
This was a Stakhanov production.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember.
Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I actually got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would think of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.